Great to have my guest back. I met her a few months back when we were talking about long-term care and the lack of contact, among other things, the problems that are inherent there. Carrie LaJadelle is joining me this morning. She is with Caregivers for Compromise. Carrie, it's good to talk to you again, ma'am. You've been well?
Yes, we have been well. Thank you.
I'm glad you're here too, because I told you I wanted to catch up with you, and I think you, fortunately, your past appearances here on the Morning News Watch, lawmakers have heard that and responded to you, so I'm pretty happy about that.
Yes. Actually, Senator Jill Tracy is currently working on legislation for us that will get presented to the House and the Senate to hopefully prevent some of the issues we've had during COVID and make sure it never happens again, we hope.
All right. First off, what is Caregivers for Compromise and what do they hope to accomplish?
So we are family members, friends of people that are in any variety of long-term care across the United States. I'm the spokesperson for the Illinois chapter. And we are trying to remind people that our loved ones 10 months and a day later are still locked inside of their long-term care facilities, whether you're talking about a two-year-old with complex respiratory issues or a 89-year-old grandmother who needs skilled care. They're locked in. They're not, for the most part, not allowed any visitors, and they've been this way for 10 months and a day.
All right, now, you did see some success in this. The Illinois Department of Public Health's Compassionate Caregivers Guidance and Essential Caregivers Guidance, you say that's a start, but you need more.
It is a start. The Compassionate Care Guidance allows a resident who has either shown that they are failing in some way, either mentally, physically, cognitively, if they're failing, they're allowed to have somebody come in and see them. That's either a family or a friend under certain criteria. First problem is Illinois IDPH and Centers for Medicaid and Medicare did not mandate this. So I would say 95% of the facilities are digging their heels in the ground and trying to refuse it. Second is, again, these people have to already be in danger. Why are we waiting till their failure to thrive, which means they're headed towards death? They're not there yet. The essential caregivers is a little more loose as far as what you have to do to meet that criteria. And they're allowed to, again, pick one or two people. They're not allowed there at the same time. But to do essential care, the facility has to have zero COVID cases. Do you know how hard zero COVID cases is?
Yeah, I do. I got an idea, but can you be more precise? Is it possible?
Almost virtually impossible.
Right.
It's not even just zero. It's zero for 28 days.
All right. Now,
so they have to be a month without any before they can even consider letting an essential caregiver in. Compassionate care, they can let some people in, but it's a much tighter restriction.
Right.
Which is fine if the facilities would work with families, but they're not.
All right.
The majority are not.
All right. There's nothing compelling these caregivers to do that either.
No, there really is not. Right now they have total control. Even if it isn't the best scenario for them, it's, in their opinion, if they keep the families out, they're going to keep more of the COVID out. We've already proven in 10 months that is not the case. There's been, 40% of the deaths in the United States from COVID are related to long-term care, whether it's residents or staff, but only 1% of the general population lives in long-term care.
All right. Now, this is something that a number of people have brought to me that when they did for a short period of time, maybe got to see their family, maybe they were volunteering by washing dishes or cooking meals or something, and they were becoming part of the volunteer staff so they could see their family. And, it came to me that understaffing, and part of this, you just touched on it, it's one of the, I wanted to go to it next, is because it's proliferation in long-term care. And that it's not just the people that are there for the care, but it's also the staff, which has resulted in understaffing. And one woman in particular reached out to me and wanted to see her mom and said when she finally did, She didn't have the things that she needed. For instance, her hearing aids. You're already isolated, but the staff had not given her her hearing aid, so she was isolated and then isolated again by not being able to be in touch with her environment. And once I start talking to other people, this is something that has been a really big deal, because there are independent needs, and we understand understaffing. They're under people a lot of stress. But there needs to be a way to move forward when it comes to this issue. And this has been a particular issue, too, because they had these staffing rules implemented by JCAR. They were supposed to take effect in January, but apparently they weren't compelled once again.
No, they have. Illinois has pushed off the requirements. Facilities are still required to report, but they're not going to be fined or penalized in any manner, at least until the second or third quarter of 2021. You know, without mandatory staffing, you know, and even that is a bare minimum, you know, to what does it truly take? And I'm not even sure those staffing numbers are even enough, but it was something. But yes, people are missing their hearing aids. They're missing their glasses, their dentures, their, you know, they're wearing somebody else's clothes besides their own. Or you're told, you know, you come to do a window visit, which a lot of people are still doing, even though it's freezing cold out, and their dad has shorts on. Why is dad wearing shorts? Well, he doesn't have any pants. He had pants 10 months ago. Okay, we have no clue what our loved ones have any longer in their possession. We know what they started with. We don't know where they're sitting today. Even those of us like myself who are allowed compassionate care visits, I'm not allowed in my son's room. I'm only allowed in a secured area in the front of the building that is literally just myself and my son.
Right.
So, you know, unless I see what he's wearing and see that it is not acceptable or it's falling apart, I have no knowledge of what's going on.
Okay.
In his room.
Let's talk a minute about this, because I can hear in your voice this issue with your son. You and I have talked about this privately, and if you'd rather skip over this, I can.
No, we're totally okay.
Okay. All right. Now, and here's, I find this interesting because of the vaccine. I've had two or three people that have already sent texts to me this morning on the American Monument text line asking about vaccines for 65 and older, long-term care, and people who have underlying health conditions. Now, in your case, first off, let's tell people about your son and what your personal experience has been, especially in relationship to if you go visit him requiring a quarantine. Can you start at the beginning of that story, Carrie?
So, yes. So, I have a 32-year-old son who is medically complex. He has a rare seizure disorder, diabetes, and a host of other illnesses. He has lived in the facility he's in Clinton County for about 7.5 years. I live around the corner on purpose, so I could be there 7 days a week if I chose. For 128 days, I did not see my son at all. During the next 30 days, the only time I saw him was at doctor's appointments, and I was not allowed to hug him, kiss him, and I had to stay 6 feet away. After that, we brought him home for a four-day weekend, and the decline I saw was a lot. You know, he lost a lot physically. He lost a lot cognitively. He just couldn't put sentences together the way he used to, and it's from the isolation, from the lack of socialization. You know, the motor skills that he lost are because they couldn't get him up and walk him around the building like they normally would to help him to keep his muscles, because everybody was quarantined. When he went back after the 4 days, he had to go to total isolation for 14 days in his room with the door shut, and staff would come in and take care of him, but that was the only time anybody was around. And that still continues even now once he gets the vaccine. He's scheduled to get his vaccine on the 26th. Last week, I communicated with Evan Shulman, which is the director of nursing home services for the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid, and I asked him some very point-blank questions, you know, and I presented to him what we felt seemed like a reasonable compromise, once people are vaccinated. And what we were asking was, once somebody has had both their vaccines, and then they've had their 14 days afterwards, because that's where they're saying you'll be, you know, fully protected.
Right, that's what they say, playing it safe.
Right. Then at least allow those people to leave with their families. Let them go home. Let them go out in the community. Just get them out of the four walls. We were told no. We were told that, and like I said, this was personal conversation between myself and CMS, that until the numbers can prove that it's truly working and the positivity rates are coming down, the long-term death numbers are coming down, long-term care cases are coming down, there will be no changes in visitation. There will be no changes if a resident leaves. Now, a resident always has the right to leave a facility, but if they leave for more than 24 hours, they're guaranteed a 14-day lockdown, whether they go home or a hospital, anywhere. If you're 24 hours or more, guaranteed.
Right.
If it's less than 24 hours, the facilities are given the right to make a choice of how they decide to observe for the next 2 weeks.
Right, and based on the fact that they're constantly getting tested. I mean, in the notes here that I have, that you're tested
exactly
a minimum of 4 times and usually 6 times a week.
Right, so my son came home for Christmas, and the day he went back, they tested him twice. They did a rapid test, and they did a send-out test, because they're, you know, proven, they're a little more accurate. So fine, okay, there's two tests. 2 days later, the facility was scheduled for the next round of tests, so he got tested again. And like, they do that twice a week. So in that 14 days, he was tested 6 times. All 6 were negative. All 14 days, he was still in isolation. That he was in his room, and that's where he had to stay for staff to come in, where at this point, they're mostly just wearing masks and face shields, but because he's in quote-unquote quarantine, they have to be in full PPE again. And he's hidden from the world for 2 weeks.
All right, Carrie Legendale is joining us. She is Caregivers for Compromise. You've been fighting this now for a number of months since you and I met. It's interesting, when I was quickly looking at the statistics that you shared with us earlier, as I wanted to take a look at this real quick. So less than 1% of America's population lives in long-term care facilities. But as of January 7th, 2021, 37% of the COVID deaths are from long-term care. And that number comes up to 133,350, when in fact the Johns Hopkins University says total deaths 380,640 as of last night. So just to give you an idea of the threat that exists there, while at the same time, this is the way I look at this, Carrie. There's a price for things and there's a cost for things. All right, price is that monetary number, and then there's the cost. And that's the way when I listen to your voice and saying, all right, I visited with my son, and he was with me for Christmas, but then you can't see him for 14 days afterwards because of the quarantine. You talk about the understaffing that's here. You talk about the fact that they've made rules to make things better, but they don't have to follow them. So I'm wondering, what is it that you hope to accomplish next, Carrie, to be able to advance your cause and the cause of Caregivers for Compromise forward?
Well, Senator Jill Tracy is, like I said, currently working on a bill that hopefully will make it that this can never happen again, that every resident in long-term care, whether they're pediatric, which people don't understand, there's somewhere between 4,000 and 5,000 kids in the United States that live in a medically designated long-term care facility across the United States. That's just medically. We're not talking about foster kids or any of the rest. They're in the same boat we are. I have talked to parents that are 10 months without seeing their 2-year-old. We have approximately a little over 30,000 extra deaths this year in 2020 in the United States for people with Alzheimer's and dementia over the year prior. And it has to be from the isolation and the quarantine. These people are confused. They don't understand why nobody's coming to see them. They feel like they've been abandoned, And because of their dementia and their Alzheimer's, they're cognitively compromised. There is no way for them to understand.
Yeah, and you know what's interesting is the term that I've a couple of people have shared with me about their parents that are in these situations is the parents feel as though they're being punished and they don't know what they have done wrong to be punished like this.
100%. That is exactly it. They feel like they're being punished. They don't understand why. And there's no way to explain it to them, especially if you're in a facility that's not allowing compassionate care visits and you're having to visit through a window or do a, you know, FaceTime or Zoom. I'm sorry, they don't understand why are you standing outside, bundled up, covered in clothing, freezing, and trying to yell at them through the window.
Right.
They don't understand why are you in this little box.
Yeah, I find it interesting that when we look at prisoners' rights, that one of the things, you know, isolation is used as a punishment. And here they say it's safety, but it still has the same outcome. And when it comes to perception, and I know the people in healthcare don't see it that way in some cases, or they do understand and they're struggling with it. Now, here's another, just a question that came in on the American Monument text line. A friend of mine just texted in and says, does Carrie work with assisted living facilities on these issues as well?
Absolutely. We are working on anything that is considered a long-term care facility, assisted living, group homes, SILAs, which are 4- and 8-bed houses for adults with developmental disabilities that are in the same boat. We are working with families from the Murray Center. So we will help anybody who reaches out to me. I will. You can find me on Facebook. You can Google me. I pop up on YouTube. It's everywhere. Okay. I will help anybody I can. I've come up with, after doing enough research of how these bill or how CMS and IDPH and stuff have written the rules, I have formatted letters that people can use to show cause and effect.
All right. We're going to
show them why this resident needs it and by allowing me in what the effect is going to be.